across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, guys, Lord G has taken their stance again and now demonetized the Freeman TV YouTube channel. Luckily, I mean, I wish I'd never given anything over to Lord G, you know, Google, in the first place. But, you know, sometimes it seems like a good thing. Get a little extra income. But you know what? I don't really care. So the YouTube, they demonetized me. You guys made that up. And glow-in-the-dark cat t-shirts easily. So I want to let you know they're almost gone. There's just a few large of the glow-in-the-dark t-shirts left. So get them to help make up for Lord G and his fascist statement of shutting down paying the Freeman TV YouTube channel. Not that I ever really cared about that, because the truth is, as long as FreemanTV.com exists, and as long as you guys come here and support the show, it'll keep going. You know, server fees have to be paid or everything vanishes. So please come over to freemantv.com, check it out, subscribe for a month and help keep things going and keep everything free going out into the world. If you guys have guest suggestions and you want to get things going, or if you have comments, get in touch with producer Steve. He's the guy behind the scenes, making all the magic happen. You can contact producer Steve at producersteve@freemantv.com. So just drop him an email, producersteve@freemantv.com. And you guys want a website as cool as freemantv.com, check out Alonzo Pichardo. He's linked right there in every page for you to sign up and have him be your webmaster. He's amazing. I have to give props to all of these people. So let's give props to producer Steve and Alonzo Pichardo and forget Lord G. We don't need him. We don't need it. And AI can just die. Because we're here to gain insight. We're here to gain understanding into our future. Now, what if you could read the future? What if you could bring these forces under your conscious control using symbolic language? Yes, tonight we're going to talk all about the tarot, but it's not going to stay there, folks. We're going to go all over the place with an amazing esoteric anarchist, Robert Bonomo. He's a filmmaker, blogger, novelist, esotericist. I mean, he's traveled around the world picking up insights all over the place, bringing together all spiritual traditions and forming himself into this esoteric anarchist. Robert has a number of books, which I think I might even be able to play a character in one of these. He has Twilight Breakout, Cactus Land, and then his latest release, Your Love, Incomplete. Tonight, we're going to open up, start talking about the 21 faces of God, the true mystery that is the tarot, this book of life, this thing that transcends our rational mind and brings us into contact with the collective soul and the deep mind. So please welcome to the Free Zone, Robert Bonomo. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Good intro.
Thank you so much. Lord G. What are we going to do about Lord G, Robert? Oh, my God. Can you imagine if this AI got a hold of the tarot? Ever think about that?
Well, you know, actually, I have, because I was trying to develop an app that actually used the true tarot. And the scary thing is, it might work. It might work.
Well, guys, we're going to share with you tonight the concepts that come out of this tarot. Now, there's all kinds of fear surrounding esoteric teachings, but we need to really start to understand that this type of teaching transcends the rational mind. It will bring up and come into transcendental exploration. I mean, it also outlines and lays within the foundation of our ideas of civilization, this deck of cards that became your traditional playing cards. I mean, honestly, right, Robert, these tarot cards, they started as a game.
Right? Oh, totally. A gambling game for soldiers. Imagine a bunch of soldiers gambling, you know, after the battle. That's what they were. That's what's so amazing about them.
And really, it came about 1400s, right? That these became something that people knew about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right around there in Italy. And then in Italy, around that time, around 1400, the major arcana get added.
So, right. Now, that changes things. So that people understand. Now, you guys have seen a regular deck of cards, your four suits and the 10 that go in. Then you have your court cards. But all of these are actually represented in the tarot. But then there are these extra cards that are archetypal in their forces. So I just wanted to put that in so people understood the structure of the deck.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So just imagine a regular deck of playing cards, but with 22 cards added. And that's what my film's on, those 22. And those 22, I think, really represent not only... That's why I named the film The 21 Faces of God, sort of the fundamental archetypes. Now, not they're the only archetypes, but
so
there are really good...
Missing?
Yeah, because for me, the fool is what's us, and the other 21 is the reflection of those archetypes. He's reflected in them, and they're reflected in him. So imagine him in the middle and the 21 around. Because the fool, remember, is zero, and for the Greeks and for most esotericists, zero doesn't exist. You can't have zero. And so that's why he's that liminal figure. He's between the regular deck and the major arcana. And he takes the journey through those 21 cards.
I understand that and have lived that. Maybe we'll get into that in the second hour.
Right.
My lecture was on that very thing. So 21 Faces of God. We're looking at transcending duality through... So. Basically, the tarot is not there to foretell the future per se. It's not there to definitively state, oh my God, this is what's going to happen. It's there to share with you archetypal expressions that might even relate to chaos physics as we know it now and random number generators and computers that aren't so random at high times and events. We pull a card, pull a spread of cards, and you get what?
Oh, okay. Yeah. When you do a spread, so imagine, I like to think, you know, these numbers are really important. 3, 7, 4. But the 3 with any kind of divination is crucial because you have the oracle, what you're asking the question of with the cards. You have the querent asking the question, and then you need the person who reads, who prepares the question and interprets the oracle. You got to have those 3. So when you ask a question of the card, there's a synchronicity between the question and the spread. And that synchronicity, that meaningful coincidence, it's the person who reads the cards who has to interpret it. But that's really what it is. It's that momentary clash between the question and the universe as it is at that moment.
Right. And it's amazing what happens. I think you have to be someone who dabbles with the tarot to really register, because I read tarot. I have for a long, long time. And I have people cry while I'm reading to them, and I honestly don't know what I'm saying to them. I'm interpreting the cards. They're hearing what the words are saying, and it really strikes so deep that tears will well up often, and you don't even know what you just told that person, really. At least that's my mind.
It's amazing because, you know, I've been reading cards for years, and, you know, the one word that I always say when I'm reading, I always say, you know, it never ceases to shock me.
Right.
Never. No matter what. Now, if people come to you and they ask silly questions, you get silly readings. But when people really come troubled, and you can tell, and they're not, you know, they're taking it seriously, the tarot is amazing. And like you say, it's not going to tell you the future. It usually tells you what's going on right now. It will give you a hint. It will give you these weird hints about the future, but you can't ask the tarot, you know, will, you know, Google stock be up tomorrow? It's not going to work. But they tell you things that you never expect. And that's why, like you said, people tear up because it's not what they were asking. That's right. The interesting thing. It's like stuff just shoots out. And, you know, we've all had synchronicities. We were talking about this, you know, before we came on, you know, these strange moments in life where you think, what was this all about? And that's what getting into the tarot, it's a great way to start into the esoteric world. And you'll see, as you get deeper, these things will start to happen in your life. They're not always good, but they begin to have meaning. Life becomes enchanted again. The world becomes enchanted. Becomes magical.
That's so important.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to live.
Yeah, that's incredibly important to start to transcend this rational world that we're being pounded into at this time. Oh my God, it's such a weird time to be alive, isn't it, Robert?
Oh my God, you know, it really is difficult. Because, you know, 10 years ago I was working in advertising and that's all I did. You know, I worked and I never thought about this kind of stuff, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And it was yesterday, I was talking to an old friend of mine from that world. And I can't believe I was in that world. You know, where everything means a dollar, it means a time, a meeting, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And once you transcend that, it's amazing what can happen to your life.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest points of this show, honestly, is just, you know, to let go and allow. And you find that life will bring you to your true soul's purpose. And I find the tarot a great way of reflecting on my archetypal forces and what's going on. And it just triggers thoughts, you know, things that you wouldn't have thought of, things that you know, it opens up all this symbolic language that give an idea. Life is Levi. He had said that a man could be locked in a jail cell with nothing but the tarot and have never read a book in his life and come out of it with a full understanding of life, the universe, and everything, with a full cosmology, you know.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I mean, I look at my life and what the tarot has done to my life. And basically, I was living in that prison. I mean, I'd read books, but I mean, what kind of books was I reading? What was I doing with my life? And it was that encounter with the tarot. And at first, I was afraid of it. The tarot scared me at first. I remember thinking, there's something creepy about these cards. But the deeper you go in, they open up. It's a great doorway to that whole world of esoterica. But I still come back to them. And one of the reasons I made this film is I really don't think that the tarot gets the respect it deserves. It's sort of like the poor cousin of all the esoterica. You know, of alchemy has Carl Jung and Kabbalah has, you know, everybody and their brother, and astrology. There's a lot of serious work in these fields. But the tarot has always been something kind of like, well, you know, but it's not true. If you really understand what the major arcana are, and you have to go back to the beginning, I think a lot of people make the mistake that the tarot can be whatever you want it to be. Not really.
No, the symbolic language is pretty clear. And exactly. It stays, no matter how many times the tarot transforms, these concepts remain the same in there. Going back to Life as Levi, when he came out with Dogma's Ritual of Transcendental Magic, let's see if we can get that one right, Dogma and Ritual of Transcendental Magic, he had stated that this was clearly his most go-to form of magic and felt, as you did, that it was underrated. And what's really intriguing to the conspiracy theorists, to throw this out for you guys, is that the guy who wrote Morals and Dogma for the Freemasons, for the Scottish Rite Freemasons, Albert Pike, he believed he was Eliphas Levi reincarnated and even had quoted him in many ways in Morals and Dogma. So this actually transformed our nation. You know, because of the Freemasonic secret societal controls put into the institutions was based out of this work.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
It's amazing. And you see it, the deeper you go, the more it just keeps appearing everywhere. I mean, even in physics, you will see strange relationships between the models for supersymmetry in the zodiac, but it's almost perfect symmetry. You think, how did that happen? And, you know, so yeah, once you get into this, it's a rabbit hole that just, that never ends.
No doubt. So when we start to look at this, we start to realize that there are archetypal forces. And honestly, that's what magic is all about, is understanding and sometimes even manipulating these archetypal forces in order to bring it about. But maybe we don't recognize these archetypal forces right off the bat. Maybe they're kind of hidden in maybe hippiedom, like Terrence McKenna or something along that line. As we start to develop culture and we realize the serious connection we have between art and culture and the ideas of what we call modern art, and of course going all the way back to like the Baroque and Renaissance periods where we had this real art, but you know, culture is disposable at this time. And I think Terrence McKenna was a great icon for the destruction of that, the Andy Warhol world, I think, if I put it that way.
Yeah, he saw right through it. And he also, you know, a lot of people don't understand the context of that famous quote from McKenna that I use in the film. I use in that voiceover, you know, that culture's not your friend. And he tells, in one lecture, he talks about, I was cracks me up. Terrence McKenna gets his yearly checkup, you know? But anyway, he says he goes to get his yearly checkup. He's about 45. And the doctor says, you know, you should be happy because, you know, 100 years ago, you'd have been dead. Most men didn't live this long. And McKenna had that insight that culture is not made for the second half of life. It just stops working. I mean, it works to keep you paying the mortgage and raising the kids, which is okay. I'm not saying that it's we don't need it. But once you get past that, it does absolutely nothing for you. And all it wants to do is suck you back in. And that's why you've got to escape it. It's not your friend. It's a big scheme. Now, I don't want to sound so negative because, you know, when you're 25, you know, you want maybe a family, you want a house, you want kids. I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But it's not the end all. You've got to move past it and go into that never, never land beyond culture.
Is that why every movie that comes out is some horrible remake of the 80s?
You know, I really have a hard time now watching anything. I can't suspend the disbelief. I just watch it. I'm like, are you serious? You really want me to believe this? It's kind of sad because I remember when I could watch a movie and just be all in. Yeah. Very rare now that I find anything that I can go all in on. Very rare.
Well, it is all social engineering. It's all developed to develop the culture that we are seeing erupt into the streets right now.
Absolutely. And I used to work in advertising. So, I mean, my job was just manipulate your words, which would then manipulate your thoughts, which would then manipulate your actions. And your action for me was to buy my product. I mean, that's how I looked at what I did. But then I always thought, well, culture's different, no? But then I realized, you know what? It's all advertising. They're all direct marketers.
So where do we see our culture? It seems as if, I mean, if I were going to look at the archetypal forces right now, I honestly see the death card. And this is due to the amount of sadness and suicide that I see going on. Mm-hmm. It just feels, or even, you know, the Ten of Swords.
Yeah, the Ten of Swords is, and also there's a lot of the Tower going on, that idea where all of the dogma and the beliefs that we had, because, you know, we're about the same age. Remember when we were kids, there were certain things we kind of believed. It's just all crumbling, just collapsed. You know, I was watching the Kavanaugh hearings, and it was sad in a sense. It was like, I was saying this the other day, it's like watching a family break up, you know?
Yeah.
Mom says, you know, I can't do it anymore. And dad's like, all right. I mean, that's what it felt like. It's just like, it's just all collapsing. Nothing. But the good thing is hope, because, you know, on the positive side, though, you talk to people, man, people are waking up like crazy. I mean, it's just like they're popping out of nowhere saying, this is all bullshit. So I'm positive in the sense I think something really interesting will come, but we've got a few bad years to come. It's a time to hunker down and wait it out.
Yeah, you know, I always try not to have an emotional reaction when I see the tower card. You know, like, okay, don't freak out. Don't freak out. Because really, you know, destruction means creation. But how strange was it that the Twin Towers really did look like the tower card?
You know, and I use that in, when I do the, in the tower card, I use the Twin Towers going down, and then I show Liberty Tower coming up. So it's like the alchemic process.
Right.
And it's the more you think about that, it's amazing, because if you really follow the path of the cards, what comes after that, you know, what comes after the tower is hope. But that is the darkest moment. And when I mean the darkest moment, I don't mean one day. I mean, an era, maybe a generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
No. Yeah, I was just going to.
Yeah. Well, we can see that there is a harmony that especially these guys know about. I mean, 9/11 was written about in black magic books. The very numbers that these harmonies of pre-existing harmonies that go between signs and letters and numbers, and then each of these are there in the tarot. You've got your you know, the Hebrew, which translates into the numbers. You've got the signs, and all of this is part of this universal science, this that comes together, that it seems that those in power have some more knowledge on. And obviously with Pike thinking he's Levi, the people in power are using these forms of magic, and did specifically choose something like the number 9/11 to represent that tower day.
And, you know, a lot of people in the United States might not be aware of this, but 911 days after 9/11 was the attacks in Madrid. And on the, remember the subway attacks on the 11th of March? That was 2003. And I remember a judge saying, well, this is obviously connected, because why would they take 911 days? Just so if anyone had any doubts. And this was a judge. The judge was like, well, it's clear it's the same people, because, right?
Right.
Whoever did this is just reinforcing that 9/11 to make sure that you pay attention to it.
So what do you think of someone like Aleister Crowley, who came along and then suddenly decided, no, I'm going to change the tarot. I'm going to flip, what was it, 8 and 11 and swap them out, strength and alchemy, temperance, or going to just change the tree to my will.
Right. Yeah, that's a complex, because the Rider-Waite deck actually changes the Marseille deck. With justice and strength, they get switched to fit it into the zodiac. So then Crowley switches it back. I'm not a big expert on the Crowley deck. I don't use it. I don't like it. It's just not my thing. It just never.
It's dark.
And the artwork, I'm just not, because, you know, Pamela Coleman Smith's artwork, I think, is just brilliant. I love it. And I just don't resonate with Crowley. You know, I know folks do, and I know folks love his deck. But, you know, everyone's got to find the deck that works for them.
Well, we live in dark times. People relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's gotten darker and darker. And what's that TV show that was on that lately with about Crowley, about the guy? Oh, what's the guy with the rockets?
Strange Angel.
I watched that. Yeah.
I mean, on CBS, here you are on CBS with the big eyes staring you down. and they're showing full frontal sex rituals of the OTO. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I bring up the OTO a lot, you know, because in my opinion, they're the ones doing most of the black magic out there. Most of the symbolism that I see goes to the Ordo Templi Orientis, the OTO. Most of the darker magic that I see that deals with extraterrestrial goes to the Typhonian order of the OTO. But, you know, I've been talking about the OTO for, you know, a dozen years, and no one knows who they are. And then now, all of a sudden, on CBS, you can watch an OTO live sex ritual with the full frontal nudity going on and the full sexual ritual going on. And, it's, you know, it's you got to pay for it, but it's on CBS. You know, it's crazy.
And it was amazing because if you watch TV, just take a look at what's on TV. It's pure materialism. I mean, there's no meat on the bone. It's just social engineering. And the one program where they open up a little bit the concept of transcendence, you know, that there could be something going on, and that's where they go. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating. That's where we are. And I'm not judging people who are in that. And I mean, I think that's a path for certain people. That's fine. But is that what is that the best we can do? I mean, if we're going to have only one, that's where we go. It was a little bit depressing.
Yeah. Because, okay, let's talk about it a little bit. The different magical orders. I mean, we got the Golden Dawn, the Rosicrucians, the Theosophists, the Thule Society, Masons, you know, even we'll throw Skull and Bones in there just to keep it. These guys practicing magic. I mean, this is a big part of our lives, and it's been completely removed from anybody's life wonder and the mystery of existence.
And, you know, magic is a technique. It's a skill. It's an art. But magic for magic's sake has the only thing magic for magic's sake will do, apart from, you know, whatever the magic is, it will open you up to the concept that there is a transcendent quality to the world. It's not a pure materialistic worldview. And that's, I mean, when I do readings, I've often tell people, you know, sometimes I get more out of this than you do, because you get people who just want the answer. And I do the reading and I see what's going on. And they're like, well, you know, is Johnny coming back or not? And I'm like, honey, this is not about Johnny, you know, but you know what I'm saying? But yeah. I mean, I was listening to another podcast today. Some folks were talking about using spells to kill people. And they were giggling, like, ha, ha, ha. And I was thinking, you know, it's the point. What I mean is the point of the tarot is there is a liturgy. The liturgy of the tarot is divination because it opens you up. But that's not the highest value of the tarot. What the tarot can really show you is a universal order and a path to waking up. That's the highest realm of the tarot. Divination is great, but if you stay there, you're really just a reformed materialist.
Right. Yeah, it's all about the awakening, and with the awakening comes that whole stages of grief, and then you got to walk through the Tower card and through the Death card until you get to Temperance and start moving your way up to the Sun, right?
Yeah, I mean, once you get to the Sun, you know, but when you go through that Devil, and that tower, if you're hooked on magic, if you know you're casting spells and trying to make money, and because remember that stuff all comes back unless you're doing a lot of sacrifice, you know, you got to pay the piper. And if you're not paying the piper, then you're probably in pretty dark. So you're not going to get past the Devil if you're still on that.
Yeah, exactly. You just get drawn deeper and deeper into these this fallen angel belief system that we currently live under. And I mean, right now we're going into this situation where, well, we have glow-in-the-dark animals. We have Sophia, our goddess of wisdom, is a robot. and and then AI with the 5G coming on. This takes us right out of the realms of the mystical and puts us in, like, you traveled so much, you've gone all over, and you didn't have Yelp, you didn't have things to tell you, you didn't have Google Maps, you just had you, and should I make a left here or a right, right?
And that's the only, you know, I feel bad for young people today, because when I first started traveling, like, you go over, when I was like, what, 20, when I first went by myself, maybe 22, when you traveled the 1980s, you traveled, man. I mean, you didn't talk to anybody. You didn't read any newspaper. I mean, if you got hold of the Herald Tribune, you know, it was a two-week-old Herald Tribune. You know, you could check some baseball scores and see what's going on. That was it. And so you could really experience the world in that, because when you go to a new place and you don't know anybody, it's magical.
Right.
But today, I was in Laos, in Luang Prabang, which is a really cool city. And I see these four guys, and we were in this bar, this French woman who's really interesting, and there's four guys at a table, and they all have their iPhones. It's like, why did you even get on the plane to fly to the end of the world? So you could, you know, and people, I think people today can't really travel. Not like they used to. Not like they used to. Throw those phones away, folks.
Yeah, I was thinking about that and the idea and the relationship between radio and podcasting, because now everything is left there. It's like the days of radio, you had to be there to catch it, get the show coast to coast. You know, we maybe shared cassette tapes between us from coast to coast, you know?
Right. I remember as a kid listening to Larry King. Remember Larry King had that show at from 12 to 3? And he would have writers on. What was it called? The Mutual Radio Network. I was like maybe 12 years old. I'd spend up till 3 o'clock in the morning listening to guys who'd written books. I was like, oh, this is so cool. But that was, like you said, that was gone. That was a moment. You know, you're 12 years old listening to the radio, those little resistors, and then it was gone.
Yeah.
Listening to, what was it? The shortwave I used to listen to, I guess it was Radio Moscow. I used to love that. Those communist dudes, you know? Yeah. Today. Moscow, we've had a great harvest. It's like, whoa. you can't get that feeling anymore. Like 12 years old going, holy shit, that's a commie, man.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's not.
No doubt about it. Now everything's out in front, and we seem, you know, we're in a generation where they think they know everything because, you know, well, if it's on the internet, and it's just so much of life that's not on the internet and so much lost, and we're going to be put into this AI map where we're all just kind of guided to, well, the damages of culture, you know, the archetypes that they're going to throw in front of us.
Yeah. Did you, I'm just wondering, did you watch the Musk interview with Rogan?
Oh yeah.
That was pretty out there, huh? When he was talking about Neuralink.
Yeah.
And he's a pure materialist. I mean, there is not a drop of soul in that guy.
No.
And I mean, honestly, I respect him. I respect Musk. Musk is just an incredible, I mean, what this guy's been capable of doing. But the man has no soul. I mean, what he's been able to do on the material plane is exceptional. But his world, the world that he envisions, is terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. And you know what? There's no way of escaping that world. None. It's like saying, well, imagine when language first appeared, or the first written language. I mean, think about how that changed the world, no? You couldn't go back and just put that genie back in the bottle.
Right.
And this genie, you can't put back in the bottle. So I think the point is not how do we stop it, but how do we get on this wave and not just get crushed on a rock, you know? We got to ride this thing all the way to the beach.
Well, a lot of it is bringing back that wonder. I was all for Y2K, you know, let it come down. I didn't want it to go down like Fight Club. I wanted it to just kind of, you know, fade away, and all of that technology gone and all of the, I was ready for it because to stir people out of the stupor that they're in, the zombification, if we will, the zombie masses, right?
Right.
There's going to have to be something really shakes them up, really shuts it down, but then opens the view of these archetypal forces, opens the view of the fact that there is something mystical going on in our lives, that it's not just A, B, C.
And the mystical is the real. That's one of the big points of the film. I really try and hammer that in. You know, there are two paths, but one of them ends in death and one of them ends in, you know, eternally expanding consciousness. Infinite consciousness. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening who've had that experience. They know, but there's a lot of people that don't know.
Right.
And I think that what we got to do is just give them a taste, because one of them is just going to fade away. It's all going to dissolve. It's not real. Well, I mean, it's not real. It's not real, or it's, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
Nothing in the real world is real. That's the truth of it. Everything we call the real world is just manufactured out of our minds and could easily change with a thought.
Exactly. It's all a metaphor. But when you realize that everything is a metaphor, everything, and it's a metaphor, and it's not a metaphor, well, oh, I get the metaphor. All you get is another metaphor. And a lot of people, that terrifies them. But when you can open up to that and just see it's just doors opening up to infinity, it's a fabulous, it's amazing. But that's the key. Remember, it's all the metaphor. For what? That's what we have to find out.
Is that what you're putting out in your novels?
Well, yeah, I mean, the novels were a progression. You know, I mean, I'm no savant. I mean, I don't claim to be any guru or anything, but you know, the only thing I can claim to have done is progressed. But for example, in Cactus Land, that was just a dystopia. But the end of that dystopia, there is a moment of, no, I'm not sure I even understand how that novel ends, but
right. Leave it to the reader.
Leave that one to the reader. Yeah. But that's really the main, I think the main focus of this film. You know, it's beautiful too, because a lot of people I thought would get it didn't, but I get some really nice notes and letters and people are just like, yes, you know?
Yeah. You bring a lot into that. You know, it's not, people think it's just like, oh, the tarot means this, but no, when you start to take it and analyze it with the culture of now and the past and incorporate the different characters involved, which I hope we get into more in the second hour, you know, talk about some of these archetypes, Hitler and some of the forces, the people that have become basically these magical archetypal forces and represent these things. Maybe we'll even chat a bit more about Joe Rogan since we brought that in.
Right, yeah.
But so you give these books away. You can get them on Smashwords and you can go to cactusland.com and just link straight in and get your novels and also your 27-part film.
Yeah, it's all for free. So there's no back end. I gave up my direct marketing days. I think this is to pay back all the karma. All of the stuff that people didn't need that I got them to buy so many years, living high in the hog doing that. So I guess this is payback. So I'm giving it all away.
Nice.
Hopefully I'll get to zero by the end, no?
Right.
I paid it all back in the last moment.
I'm kind of going the other way, but yeah, no, I hear you exactly.
I was a bad boy, Freeman. I was kind of a bad boy.
Yeah. That's all right. We'll meet somewhere in the middle and that's where it all works.
Exactly.
Yeah. I work my way up from nothing. And, you know, first time in my life, I'm thinking I'm somewhat stable, but at the same time, I live in a reality where I could be shut off at any moment. You know, the moment iTunes and PayPal and Google and Facebook and YouTube all decide collectively to say goodbye to Freeman, you know, that's the end of my career, really, unless I can, you know, I'll eke out some other way to keep going.
Yeah, you know, Alan Watts had a wonderful book on, I can't remember what the title was, but it was something like, it was something about living with insecurity. And when you can get comfortable with that level of insecurity, it's a fabulous thing, because what are you afraid of?
Right.
You know, it's, you know, what security seems to create is more insecurity that needs more security, that, you know, it just never ends. But when you just kind of give up, and I think a lot of people, I'm guessing you've probably had a lot of these moments, and a lot of folks listening have these moments where you're just like, I'm done. There is just, all the doors are closed. You kind of throw up your hands, and it's weird. That's when stuff happens. Exactly. You're just like, all right, whatever. You know?
Yeah, that's the biggest lesson you can take from this. And for me, it was the Y2K ritual. Honestly, I watched a Luciferian ritual on television performed around the globe. And it was like, this is too much, guys. No way. I quit. All right. I quit. This was, you know, 1999. I quit the real world. It's all an illusion, guys. Everything you think is fake. And I just walked away. And that insecurity, I didn't have that. You know, I was an okay fool. I was like stepping off the cliff happily, with not worrying about where I was going to go, where I was going to go, or what I was going to eat, or where I'd sleep. And I would always take somebody with me on the road in these crazy travels, and I see that insecurity weighed on them big time. Like, where are we going to go, man? Where are we going to sleep? Like, most of the time I'd driven 100 miles, and I didn't even know where I was going, you know? And they're like, where are we going? I'm like, oh, we'll pick somewhere, you know? And that kind of...
Yeah. I was just going to say that's it, you know, when you just, and what's weird too, is when you look back, it all makes sense. But you say, who was writing that script?
Right. Exactly.
I think even Schopenhauer talked about that, you know, when he got older, he looked back in his life and he's like, how can it all have had that order? You know, I remember right in 2008, it all went south for me and I got kicked square in the nuts, but good. And I remember thinking, "This, I'm done." But now I look back and I was like, the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Thank God.
So the tower isn't really a frightful card. It's a rebuilder.
Freedom. It is. But you got to pass through the dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people think, well, oh, I lost everything. Okay, now I'm awake. No, it doesn't work that way. You know, you got to get punched a couple times, maybe a few, you know, and then you got to get up and get punched a few more times, and then you go through. But it ain't easy. If it were easy, everyone would do it. It would be any fun. So
that's true. But I'm looking forward to them all coming around and kicking in and moving away from this craziness that is our current lives, where it's the debate of the day, and whatever's hot on Twitter, everybody's going to yell about today. You know, like Kavanaugh throwing ice at people.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's so sad. You can just, whatever you turn on, left, right, even the middle, it's just, the only thing is turn it off. There you go. Turn it off. And
well, that was the thing that panicked everybody about the presidential message through the emergency alert system, was that they can't turn it off. Like, wait a minute, I can't turn this off. That makes me panic.
Oh, I didn't realize that. You couldn't like not get the message.
No. I actually discovered that a while back when I got started getting Amber alerts on my phone, and I'm like, I don't want this. So I went to settings and I learned that I could turn everything off except the presidential alert messages.
Oh, wow.
See, I was really hoping it was going to be Trump. Like, well, folks, you know, the deep state, they're coming in hard, but we're going to take them down. CIA thinks they got control of this shit, but really, I got this. We're going to take Space Force, and we're going to take them out. Yeah. But no twits from Twitter or from Trump.
So. Yeah, no dice on that. And, you know, we know what's kind of sad is they've dumbed it down to such a level now that it's not even interesting. I mean, it's... it's not even subtle. It's like a bad comic book. When you watch it, it's really like a bad comic book. And you think, good God, no. Get some good copywriters. There's got to be somebody who can write a good script.
You would think, man. They're writing such good Hollywood. Come on, man. You know, they got 24 to go off of.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, Breaking Bad, whatever. Get Vince Gilligan to, you know, just the deep state should hire Vince Gilligan just to make it a little bit more intriguing.
But it's probably gotten a little more confusing for you when you start to discuss the Trump cards.
Yeah, somebody made a great comment. No, if you want to hear a lot of Trump, watch this film. I was
there you go. Robert, thank you so much for this first hour. I'm really looking forward to our second because I know we're going to get much deeper into the esoteric realms and the idea of being esoteric anarchist. Do you want to just kind of describe that a moment as we sign off?
Yeah, because when you start to lose all the dogma, it just all crumbles. And the only thing you want is no archons, no deep state. And so the only alternative is anarchism. And the same thing happens with religion. Once you start to see what they're doing with mainstream religion, you just got the exoteric religion, so to speak. You got to go to the esoteric. So that's how I came up with that idea, you know, as the esoteric anarchist was, you know, I'm leaving the dogma of the state and the dogma of the religion, and I'm going underground, esoteric anarchist.
Right. And who are some of your favorite inspirations in the magical realms?
What do you mean, like in...
You know, like for people to go study, like where would they go to start to get deeper understandings of esoteric? I personally, I like Israel Regardi. I like the Golden Dawn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Manly P. Hall.
Manly P. Hall is fascinating. And it, I mean, and the great thing about him is, I mean, when you think that he wrote that book, how old is he? Like 25?
I think, yeah, 27, I think. That's crazy. The secret teachings of all ages is like a compendium of every esoteric thought throughout time. And there's this 27-year-old little kid writing it down. That's incredible.
One guy I want to shout out to that had a big influence on me, and he's still on, is Stefan Heller at Gnosis.org. He's a bishop of a Gnostic church in LA, and he has tons of lectures on the Kabbalah, and especially alchemy, because I'm fascinated by alchemy. And he really understands alchemy from kind of the Jungian point of view. And then he's also involved in theosophy and the Gnostic view. So Stefan Heller is a great place also to go. He's got free stuff, but then, you know, it's like $20 and you can get a whole series like on certain alchemic texts. He's helped me a lot. And he's a great guy. He's a fascinating guy.
Fantastic. Now, might have to get him scheduled. Producer Steve at freemantv.com. For any comments and guest suggestions, please contact Producer Steve because we want to keep this conversation going. To me, this is the quintessence of everything that I say, everything that we look at on this and looking at the dark side, trying to understand the forces against us is really there to crumble that world and bring about this mystical realm that exists around us at all times to get more people to let go, free themselves from the cultural structures that are just nothing but social engineering, and start to feel that true power, that goosebumping glory that is the synchronistic realms that just blow your mind and show you that the life, the universe, and everything is alive and working in this most beautiful transcendental method. So that is my hope that all of you will take from this program. And it definitely helps to talk with people like Robert Bonomo, sorry about that. Bonomo. Robert, you definitely are laying it out there for us to really see that part of life, the bring back the mystical, bring back the transcendental, yeah. Get to the esoteric anarchism that is at the heart of every one of our souls. And it is the reason that we all know something is wrong. or we wouldn't
exactly. And if you don't, they're going to use it to control you. So I mean, you've got the choice: let them do it, or you do it.
There you go.
It's up to you.
Exactly. Well, thank you, folks, for tuning in every week here on FreemanTV.com. I hope you'll continue to come over and support the show. Forget Lord G. I don't care about him. All I care about is you guys and us taking care of one another. So, keep it up. It's awesome. Please come by and check out the glow-in-the-dark shirts. I guess I'm going to have to make up some more of these to keep limited T-shirts coming out to you. And help support the show. That's really all that's for. So thank you guys so much for buying all of those, because they went fast. But there are a couple of left. So if you want them, get on over to freemantv.com and check it out. If you want to get deeper and deeper into the 21 Faces of God and even get free novels to keep you entertained and open up your third eye, go over to... sorry.
Oh, thecactusland.com. Or you can just go to YouTube and pop in the 21 Faces of God and you can watch the film.
There you go. So thank you all so much, and we will see you next week.